This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Episode of the Psychovertical podcast, a weekly podcast about a weekly podcast by a climber who's not really a climber, and it's not really about climbing. It's about all sorts of things. I'm your host, Andy Kirkpatrick, the man who says all the time. So hopefully this is going to be coming out on time tomorrow, which is cool, like, cool, oh my God, did I just say the word cool? Christ almighty, I don't know where that came from. you know, I'll start saying cool, and I'll start, like, going up at the end of every sentence, which is even worse, isn't it? Cool. I started saying, when I first went to America for, like, 4 or 5 weeks, first time, and I got into the habit of saying dude all the time, like, as a joke to begin with, like, because, you know, Americans are very dudey. They are in California. And like, dude is like a really good word in that it kind of can cover loads of things. It's like one word that can just cover lots of things. Like, you probably just get through life just saying dude, like dude and dude and dude. You know, it's a really cool word, really. And then I was working in this climbing shop when I came back. And this guy was like, excuse me, I'd like to buy some socks. And I was like, oh, just ask that dude over there. And he was like, dude? Anyway, so what I've been doing this week before I get on with the main thing, a bit tired. It's like, so I remember, as I've probably told you before, a Thursday in the Middle East is the Friday. So tomorrow is like Saturday, even though it's Friday. I still get really confused. I feel like I'm missing a day. But I'm also getting an extra day at the start of the week, so it's a bit weird. I just can't really get my head around it, and for some reason I keep going on about the call to prayer, but like they're really, I might have to go around all the mosques and take them all like an alarm clock or something, because they're all out of sync. Like in the daytime, when all the mosques start doing the call to prayer, you can hit. They all do it at the same time, and it's a little bit like, it's kind of creepy. It's a bit like a horror film, because it's not really the sound of, like, one person doing the call to prayer, it's quite cool, but when everyone does it at the same time, it's just this kind of slow, like, rising kind of cacophony of, I don't know what cacophony is, but I think it's like a coffin full of coffee, but it's all at the same time. It's kind of like something out of Pitch Black or something, you know, like, oh no, the sun's coming up, you know, we're all going to fry to death, like, whoa, 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 you know, that kind of thing. But in the morning, they all, it's like someone's, like, gets up early and starts, like, getting out of the way, you know, like, oh, I'm up anyway, I'll just do the call to prayer. So it's been going off about 4:30 in the morning, which is a pain. And also, next door neighbour, I know I've also mentioned, if anybody hasn't heard this podcast before, also there's someone in this block of flats who like starts vomiting, like they're probably like bulimic or something, but they're like vomiting as soon as the call to prayer finishes, so, which is like annoying. and maybe they're getting married or something, want to like go down a dress size or something like that. And also the next door neighbour is like getting on his bike at 4:30 in the morning on his turbo. So all in all, it's been a tiring week. So when you have to get, I have to get up at 5:30 anyway. It's probably not that bad. But what else has been happening? I did a 5K. I'm always a bit skeptical about running because I have this one of my iron laws is don't fuck yourself up, basically. D F U. I've actually got like a really bad short-term memory. I actually have it on a piece of paper from a proper child kind of doctor person, psychologist type person. They have like the short-term memory of like a six-year-old child or something. I can actually hold the word "don't fuck yourself up" and go through the alphabet at the same time to work out what it is. But anyway, if anybody knows what it is, just keep it to yourself. What was my point? Yeah, so I'm always a bit worried about running. People like run too much. I think they kind of wear themselves out. You're not really meant to do that much running. But there's not a lot to do around here, so I decided. I would just do nothing, but Vanessa decided to get us into some runs at the weekend. So I did this like 5K, and it was kind of funny. Like the only downside was like basically Vanessa was the only woman who was wearing shorts, and all the other women had leggings on. So that was a bit worrying. Not worrying, but anyway, it's quite good. But there was there was a lot of people, and basically it was just like, it was like, you know, when you see someone when there's like a bomb attack or something, there's like millions of people running in the other direction. It was a little bit like that, really. It was just full of kids who were like running really fast for like 500 meters and then just like stopped and got in the way. So, but anyway, it was kind of cool. There was this weird thing where there was like halfway around, there was like a guy, like a DJ with his decks, like in a trailer being pulled along. So you had to kind of, because, you know, I don't know why you would have that in a marathon, but, you know, see, it's very much like an Arabic thing. And you had to, like, maneuver around it. But it reminded me a bit of, is it Road Warrior, the Mad Max film? It was a little bit like that. on the subject of crazy Muslim people, I actually put, I'm often very critical of the BBC. Like, I just find I can't watch the BBC anymore. I really like the World Service and stuff. Like, I remember, I've done quite a lot of stuff for the BBC. Like, I've worked for the BBC in the front of the camera, behind the camera, worked on, you know, TV programs and things. And when I've done stuff like Radio 4 stuff, and then when I've done, like, sometimes if you're like promoting a book or something, you'll get these interviews. So I was on, like, you know, is it Midweek with Libby Purvis or something? And I have this thing, I have this game, I call it the Spell Game, which is quite a complicated game. It's also quite a risky game. Just going to drink, have a bit of my tea. I went cold last time, so I bet you're all dying to know what the Spell Game is, aren't you? I'll tell you in a minute. Did anybody watch that Pavel, the guy who, he was on Joe Rogan, Pavel Testoine, or whatever his name is. I've known about Pavel for like a long time. Bought all his books and stuff. I find him like a really fascinating character. He was on Joe Rogan, and, you know, if you get on Joe Rogan, it must be like, you know, massively important thing for your career or whatever. You know, it's like really, you know, it's up there. And like right in the middle of it, he was just like, I need some more tea. And he just like went off, just got off the stool and went off and like made himself a cup of tea, which I thought was really, really cool. So this is my Pavel moment. So I was on Midweek, and this thing with the Spell Game is basically a game where you have to make someone else think you're really stupid. And I'm pretty good at this, pretty damn good at it. And so a good example was, well, two examples would be, you say to somebody, Do you know, like, double yellow lines? Like, if you're blind, how can you tell when they're there if you, when you're parking? You know, so that's the spell. Another example was, so I play this with Vanessa, my wife, and one good one when she got me was, we're walking along in America and there's all these, like, wooden telegraph poles. And she was like, when do people come along and, like, cut all the branches off when they grow off the telegraph poles? And I was like, they don't, they're dead. And she was like, spell. So it's a really good game to play. A lot of people might just think you're a fucking idiot. You can also play the double spell game, which is much harder to do. So an example of the double spell is when you say, do you know when you, the double yellow lines, like, do you know when you park on them? Like, how can someone tell they're there when they're blind? And someone would say, because they're raised up. And they go, no, they're blind. And they go, double spell. So that's more complicated. So when I was on Radio 4 on midweek, do you know when you go into like Radio 4, like, basically only women seem to work there. There's no men, and everyone speaks in Latin, and you feel like completely out of place. Like, everything you say, you feel like you're in a Radio 4 drama. Like, hey, I'm just come up to from north to do interview on a non-televisual device. You know, you just sound like, oh, I love it when we come together, milady. You sound like someone out of Lady Chatterley's Lover. You just sound like an idiot. And everyone's like super posh and kind of super nice. And anyway, you sort of whisked upstairs for the, oh, we have someone from the, you know, from the north. And you go into the, you know, green room and, you know, and I don't really like those kind of programs where you've got, like, basically everyone's just trying to sell something. They're all just wankers, basically. They're all there like, oh, yeah. And it seems that here's got... I would never get it on Livy Purvis's programme again after this bit, but they're like, oh, we're here, Jonathan here is a professor of something in Oxford University. He's got a new book out called, you know, Tough Wankers or something. You know, it's just like that. And everyone's trying to get their little thing in, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we're all sitting around this thing, and there's a guy there who's like, I guess it was, this is before when people talked about transgender and all that kind of stuff, but he was basically like, I think he was like a transgender opera singer, you know, drag queen kind of, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, he was like totally outrageous and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. And his name was Biddy. But also, like, maybe if any foreign listeners here, there's a, I think I mentioned before, this program Blue Peter, which was really shit, that used to be on, and the producer was Biddy Baxter. So Biddy Baxter was really famous in the UK. He was very prim and proper. Like, one of the presenters got pregnant, and she had to leave the program and all that kind of stuff. So Biddy Baxter was a very famous person, but very, very prim and proper. So, So your woman turns up, the woman of this week, Libby Purvis, and I think it's Libby Purvis anyway. So she comes in and, you know, she's all like posh and stuff. You know, a bit like you just feel a bit out of place. You know, you're drinking your tea out the saucer, all that kind of stuff. And she comes in and she goes, oh, hello, everybody. And she goes to me, oh, Andy, pleased to meet you. Have you met Biddy before? And Biddy's there, like, you know, transgender, you know, drag queen, whatever. And I'm like, Biddy, what, like from Blue Peter? And she's like, no, that's another one. You know, so that was my spell moment. But the thing about the problem with the spell game is that people don't get it. Unless you explain it to them. So, but inside I was laughing, you know, they just thought like, oh my God, this guy's a moron. And, yeah, but I had the last laugh, didn't I? So, and I intentionally didn't say anything about my book. I think she brought it up, in the thing, but she was, I don't know. It was a bit weird. I find that that's why I've never really got anywhere in life. Cause I just can't play that game. I'm just not good at, it's too, you know, just do it on your own terms. So why was I telling this story? Oh, yeah, so I contacted the BBC because a lot of I slagged the BBC off. Oh, yeah, my back two stories is that, so when he went to Radio 4, it was always like really like, you know, I'd often get into arguments with people as well. Like I was once on some TV programme and I was in the green room, blue room, and first of all, the woman who was like escorting me around, she like was dressed so weirdly that I said she'd make a really good Doctor Who's assistant, which I didn't think didn't go down very well. And then I ended up being in this room with this guy who was like a government advisor on nutrition, and he was going on about people had to eat more organic food, and I was like, bollocks, basically, you know, like, where, like, most people have just got to try and get them to eat vegetables, just ignore the whole, just by saying, just putting the word organic at the beginning of it is going to destroy any, you know, just get them to eat, you know, carrots, basically. Just start anyone who thinks like eating organic food is a good idea is already eating organic food. So it's all the other people you have to deal with. I said to someone today actually that I, although I'm a very religious person, but I don't have any faith and I don't believe in anything, and that I treat religion like I treat eating fruit, in that I can understand why people do it, but I don't see why I should have to do it. So this is like one of these stories. This is a good trick about comedy, really, is that you start one story, and before you finished it, you begin another story, and they all kind of go up, and then they all come back together again at the end, hopefully. So the end of this little bit is that this is the second bit before the end of this bit, is that whenever I was at Radio 4, it was always a bit weird. And then whenever you had to go to the World Service, it was completely different. You'd go over to another part of London, where all like the embassies and stuff are, and it was just like really, really cool. It was like going into like the MI, the old like MI5 building or something. I've been into lots of interesting. I once went to Scotland Yard. That was interesting. Did a talk for Scotland Yard. Anyway, yeah, it was just like different. It was just different. It was like, you know, the control room, and it was like really a bit shambolic, and everything was like messy and wires and loads of old like equipment and stuff. And the people, you just seemed to have more time. It was almost like more like old fashioned kind of radio. And you had like, you'd have like 50 minutes to talk to someone. And I don't know how you're supposed to really have anything of any real value when you're talking to someone for, you know, such a short amount of time. So I did a program last year, the year before, called A Digital Human for Radio 4, and contacted the producer, and I'd had like a few ideas. And when we went to Denali last year, I thought it would make quite an interesting radio program. But a lot of these things, you always have to have like a series or have an idea that fits in to a series. But I was saying that what I'm thinking of doing, like I'm starting this other podcasting channel, which has nothing to do with climbing. And on it, I'm gonna take part in like Ramadan, so I'm not gonna eat for like not gonna eat for a month. Damn, I got it wrong. He died. Didn't realize you could eat when the sun went down. So I'm gonna do like Ramadan for a month, and then podcast like every single day throughout Ramadan. I was actually thinking when I was like laid awake at 4:30 in the morning as they were all going off in the mosque, I was thinking of actually getting doing some kind of pray type thing. Might be interesting to come up with my own little prayer, but I think I won't be able to do it outside because I'll probably just get murdered. Apparently when Ramadan's on, if you you'll get arrested if you're outside eating or drinking, and everything closes up, like all the even Starbucks closes up, which is like pretty damn serious for me because I won't have anywhere to go and work. I'll have to go to the mosque. So I just suggested, like, for the BBC, this would be quite an interesting person, because not only am I kind of religiously I'm agnostic, I'd probably say like in the past I was very hostile towards all religion, and I noticed today that on the Richard Dawkins Twitter that he's actually changed his Twitter thing. Profile to that he's a humorously poking fun at religion or something, which sounds like it's a little bit like submissive kind of like thing, really. So anyway, so I was one of these like Dawkins kind of Peter Hitchens, and I read like, you know, God Is Not Great and, you know, all those kind of books about religion because I was kind of interested in religion. And So I thought it'd be quite interesting. Instead of like doing a BBC, you know, Radio 4, whatever program, where you had some like Oxford, you know, posh Oxford, person, you know, who's, you know, talking about how wonderful, you know, Islam is and all that kind of stuff. And like, oh, the glory of the blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. We heard it a million times before. Because you could have someone who was like a little bit hostile towards religion, actually doing Ramadan. So anyway, I sent him this email, said like, what about this idea? And I said how this was, for me, you know, although I've really gone off the BBC of late, mainly because of Doctor Who. I don't actually watch Doctor Who, but, you know. This is the kind of programme I'd actually like to listen to on BBC. Because I think they've lost their way, BBC, a little bit. I don't mind being lectured to, but I don't want to pay for it. We shall see what happens with that. Probably nothing at all. Other news, I've been doing my accounts this week. So I have a company in Ireland and all that. I pay myself minimum wage. Like I would sack myself. I'm not even worth that. I'd sack myself if I could, but I can't. So going through my accounts is like a disaster. Oh God, it's terrible. I really hate doing that. Trying to work out I don't actually spend any money, really. My biggest expenditure is stuff like is flights. Oh my God, sorry, I do apologise. I repent. Flights and no, not that many flights. When you do if you do Kickstarter, like a crowdfunding thing, you get some money 1 year, and then you have to start actually, you know, paying for the thing. Pay people crowdfunded the year after. So there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of like orders for books. You have to like add them all up. So I really hit it. I said it's like doing your accounts. So when you finally finish this, like your spreadsheet, and you send it off to your. I have an accountant. Otherwise, I'd probably go to prison. I send it off to my accountant. It's a bit like flushing a big turd down the toilet. Like you just don't want it to come back again, and it did come back again several times. So the rambling over. My podcast on a Tuesday is like really sort of gear sort of focus. So if anyone's got any questions, send them in. But this podcast is a little bit longer and about other things. And I had a few people asking me about fear recently, like how you deal with fear. Can I have another cup of tea now? Another drink of tea. 1 second. If you pause for too long, I think on the radio something comes. You have to say something like every 10 seconds, otherwise, something clicks in, like some, you know, this is the BBC, you know, something like that. So I can't drink my tea for too long. It's going to be cold. So. Right. Is drinking tea like yawning in that when you drink it, people want to drink tea as well? I don't know. So a few questions about fear. So because I'm working at the moment on this, still trying to finish this goddamn book I'm trying to finish, which is taking forever. So I've got like tons of time to actually work out what I'm going to say. And I'm probably going to talk to my friend Pete next week. Who's rowing across the North Atlantic at some point about fear basically and about planning these kind of things. So I thought like, oh, but I'll do something about fear. And I thought instead of like actually putting any effort into it, I'll just read something out because I'm trying to learn how to read things when I'm doing podcasts and make it sound more natural. And So I just thought I'll just find something I've written about fear already. Just bang it in there, you know. So I just Googled the word fear and Andy Kirkpatrick. And I came up with some interesting things. So I came up with a few blog posts I'd written like quite a long time ago, like 2014. And it was what's interesting is when I write stuff, I generally don't read it again. I often don't read it even when I've written it. Like I might just go through it quickly and just see what spelling was, you know, see if I can spot what's spelled wrong. But I generally don't read it again. Like I did this book two years ago, Unknown Pleasures, which had like quite a few old like, bits of writing from my blog and stuff. And it's kind of weird going back and reading it. Like I have this ability to. Like I'm actually like incredibly sensitive person. like I really can't deal with any kind of criticism, which is kind of weird. And I always thought like I would eventually get good at being criticized and not take it too seriously. But it doesn't seem to be happening. And even yesterday when I was like googling the word wanker, because I was going to do something about partnerships in climbing instead of fear. So I was like googling wanker Andy Kirkpatrick, because I thought I'd written an article with the word wanker in the title. Anyway, and I came up with something on UK Bouldering about how the BMC shouldn't fund this film I made with, I didn't make it, it was about me, but by Jen Randall, Cycle Vertical, because I basically was like a racist and I was a bigot and I was, you know, I shared links to Breitbart and all this kind of stuff. And it's like from 2017. And, you know, the person who's writing it is actually someone I know, and I actually met them in Yosemite, and someone I have a lot of respect for. And when you read what that person, how that person views me in 2017, it's kind of really, really depressing. It's, you know, like like I've got the tendency to attack, if I'm attacked, I always attack back immediately, because it's in my DNA. It's like how I grew up. And, you know, you attack back immediately. And I would say that person is like, he has this illusion that he's this completely open-minded, you know, like, you know, progressive type person. But really, I would say he's like incredibly bigoted and narrow-minded himself. And but so you can say that and you could like try and attack him back. But then you just end up, but then it just sticks with you in your head like all night long, having read this thing. And then probably a lot of time today, and you're thinking about it, because you're always like, you're always going through this systems analysis, I would call it, is where you're always trying to check yourself. You're always trying to check your moral kind of bearing. And if people judge you that, like I have this thing that it's what people think about you is more important than what you think about yourself. So it would probably be very easy to see me as being someone who is like racist or whatever, because of social media, you haven't got time to explain. Like I have this thing that I don't believe I should ever provide my full biographical details, you know, that I grew up with people who were refugees and, you know, who were like, you know, black or, you know, from Lebanon or whatever. Like, I've always seen myself as not being a racist person. And although I have some very good, interesting, in my other podcast I'm going to do, I've got a really good story about how you really have to get the full story of something to really understand what's really going on. So I would say that in this period when this person thought I was being a complete racist, I think I was just like brave enough to start asking some questions that seem now to be like very relevant. And if people had asked them, you know, in 2014, we wouldn't have had Brexit and you wouldn't have had Donald Trump and all these kind of things. But anyway, so I think part of being too sensitive is also one reason why I probably don't go back and read what I've written in the past. Because I have this ability to kind of read something. Like if I know someone's going to be really critical, like when I read like reviews on Amazon, like you have a lot of really good reviews on Amazon. They have like hundreds of really good reviews. But if it's like a one-star review, I kind of like have this ability to kind of absorb all the stuff in it that's really going to like hurt me without reading the full content. I just can't read it. I just find it too painful to, because I think I'm like such a critical person in myself that I just don't need any more. I don't need any more criticism in a way. I can see all my failings. So looking at fear, finding this article about fear. What was it called? I found this article about fear, and then it referenced another one. This article is called The Thing That Scares Me, and I only like read the first little bit, and I thought it might be interesting just to read it. Without actually reading it first to see what it says, because that's kind of a bit scary, because I'm sure it's going to have loads of mistakes in it. I don't even know what it's really about. I remember a few years ago, I was at a literature festival, and decided to read, because the person before me was Helen Moore, the poet, and she was writing some fiction, I think. So I said, because you're a poet and I'm a writer, maybe I'll read some poetry. So I had this like, this poem I'd written, which was called like poem to a son or something. Poem to a son. It was about my son, basically. And in a way, it was kind of a bit of a, it was like a bit of an apology, this poem. And I started reading it and got halfway through it. There's a line about like pouring water over his head from like a jug, like in the bath when he was a baby. And it just, I just became so emotional. I couldn't even finish it. I just had to stop. And so it's actually quite scary reading what you've written, because you don't really know where you're at, really. So sorry for rambling, but this was a question. Someone sent me a question, so I'll read you the question, and then I'll get on. Oh no, it's not a question. I think the next part of this podcast will be, this actually led to another question from someone about fear. So I'm gonna try and read this out in some kind of way. I'm not trying to read it too quickly. So it's quite funny, because actually this is actually about me having to read something out, which is kind of weird. Maybe I'm just playing a trick on you. So sorry. This is the BBC. I played that song, Everyone's Free to Wear Sunscreen by Baz Luhrmann, to Ella and Ewan the other day. One of the best songs you could ever play a young person. Well, as long as they're old enough to listen. Ewan just sighed and said, "This is rubbish, it's just like someone talking." If you've never heard it, then it's based on something that Kurt Vonnegut wrote, a kind of list of advice for life, which sounds naff, but it isn't. I'm a massive fan of Kurt Vonnegut and love the way he could deconstruct events, his life and the structure of art, and lay it out for you, and in a funny way as well. Anyway, if you've never heard it, download it and listen to it a few times. And while you're at it, buy a copy of Slaughterhouse 5. In the song, there's a line about do one thing every day that scares you, that I really like, for obvious reasons. Then I played the song to Ella and Ewan in the car. I wasn't sure if it was going in their heads. Their heads down, fiddling with their phones as they drove to the seaside. But it did. It was almost every day since then. Ella keeps saying, "Dad, this is the thing that scares me today." In between trips away, this fear is not particularly present in my life very much. I guess I can get several years worth of fear in a week or so, so maybe I shouldn't feel so guilty. But I do miss it, that sudden flash of fright or the gentle rumble as you press slowly into something you dare do. It can be as invigorating as swimming in a mountain pool, but only when you've toweled off and the ordeal is over. I miss it. For a while now, life has been too good. As soon as I start to feel happy, I feel like I'm coasting, and then get that Protestant guilt about an easy life. I moved to Hathersage in the Peak at the start of the school holidays, a place I've always dreamed of living since I was about 12. There's a bit in Psycho Vertical about it, where we're camping in North Leas. I walk up to the top of Stanage and think, this is where I want to live. I've moved into Ben Bransby's house while he's away for a year. Let's hope some of his grit magic rubs off on me. I've got a new partner, Mena, who's good at proofreading, as well as an extra child, Fionn, a 5-year-old, which at 43 could be a bit tough, but there's enough magic to make up for early mornings and terrible kids TV. In brackets, I've tried to get into her some better kids TV. Result, she's kept watching iPop again, which I had no idea what she was on about until I started singing the Popeye theme song. The kids are happy. Ella takes a couple of exams a year early, getting 3 A's, including one in Latin. And I've got a job working with Montaigne starting in September. But this is all a problem. Just reading about happiness is both boring and a little sickening. Maybe it's just me, but I hate it when people talk about how happy they are. how in love, how centered, that their transoms are aligned, blah, blah. I'm happy for them, but prefer a little more subtleness when it comes to love and happiness. So I apologise for the last paragraph. If anything, though, it shows that you can go from a very pit of despair and unhappiness to somewhere close to happiness in 6 months. Doing it again, sorry. Back to fear. A few months ago, I was asked to submit an idea to Radio 4's Forethought programme, a 50-minute monologue given to a live audience and broadcast before the 9 p.m. news. I thought, I could talk 15 minutes, no problem. I put forward some ideas and was lucky enough to make it as one of the final four speakers. My chosen subject, risky play. It was only that I was told that I had to submit my text, get it approved and read it out, that I felt the first stab of fear. Read it out aloud? I can write pretty well and I can talk pretty well. The idea of writing and reading out my words was something else. I've never been good at reading, having the reading age of someone half my age at school and enduring hours of special lessons to get my reading up. As a kid, it was all about the visual. The words always scared me. Worse still, I had that word terror where I knew I was going to be asked to read something out loud. I would get the terror and my mind would literally slow down to darkness. My thoughts are tied up with the fear of making an error and showing myself as an idiot or a retard, that's exactly what would happen. Maybe that's why I could stand up on stage and improvise stuff for 2 hours without notes, because I just had to learn to do it without. And so the idea of having to read out my words, an essay of over 2,000 words, has been hanging over me for months. After much tweaking, I finally flew to Inverness yesterday to do the recording in front of an audience at Eden Court Theatre. Penny, the producer, picked me up from the airport and we drove back through the countryside. She produced other programmes about adventures, so she knew as well. I love Inverness. I miss living there. The city, well, large town, a great base for adventures, being close to real wilderness, mountains and coastline, while still having a cinema, Waterstones and good coffee. And in brackets, but God, I really sound like a coffee wanker now. Driving through the streets I'd got to know so well, where I'd felt so comfortable, made me a little sad. We all believe we know how our lives will play out. We hope we do. To fall in love, to have kids, to tow a speedboat on the back of a brand new Range Rover. Some people can see their future so clearly because they know tomorrow will be like today. This year, the same as the last. What they lack in excitement, they make up for in certainty. The tide between joy and despair, neither high nor low. They are not sad nor happy, but make the sacrifice of not risking their hand for something better in case they're dealt a worse hand. The certainty of their lives enough not to want more. I'd always imagine myself turning into an old grumpy Scotsman there. I had a Scottish name after all, and I can be grumpy. So it was sad to be back, knowing the strand of a possible history had withered and died. We drove to the BBC building, and Penny had got me over to talk for a few hours. It had sounded fine at home, but now seemed terrible. Oh no. So we drove to the BBC building and Penny had me go over the talk for a few hours. It sounded fine at home, but now seemed terrible. Where I thought I sounded like someone reading a poem, she thought I sounded like an emotionless robot. Standing in a little room, just her and I, the Scottish rain falling from the sky, rereading my words again and again, desperate for her to approve, for her approval, it made me feel like I was 10 years old again. I had felt quite confident before, but now I had nothing but the words. You need more energy, she said, and read my text back to me with more inflection, but to me it sounded too radio, too theatrical, like she turned into Tommy Saxondale. I don't feel comfortable being anyone else. I'll keep trying, I told her, knowing everything better than not good enough was beyond me. The hour of the recording arrived, and we all marched into our seats beside the lectern. I was to go after Claire Cunningham, a dancer talking about her disability was ability. As she spoke, I looked around, trying not to think about how she sounded, how good she was, her ability to sound as if she was just talking, not reading. It was too late for me to become a professional or learn to read properly. I just had to step up when she'd finished, find some energy and give it my best. After all, I never said I was good at this kind of thing. My argument and ideas would have to be enough. Next up, Andy Kirkpatrick, said the compere, and I stood up and walked over to the lectern. My heart was beating so fast, and the words looked like they were moving on the iPad. Get in control, or you're not going to be able to do this. I grabbed the side of the lectern and looked up at the audience, then swiped my iPad to start the teleprompter app. The aim for me to not go too slow or too fast, so I'd finish in exactly at 1:20 minutes. Energy, 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 I thought, as I looked at the first line, a line I'd read about 300 times, but in my terror, made no sense at all. The words all backwards, their meaning lost. I hesitated and felt 5 seconds slip through my fingers. Just imagine you're Tim Emmett, my brain screamed, and I did. I arrived back in Manchester Airport around 8 p.m, found my car and slumped into it, turned the key and retraced the same old route back over the Pennines, one I'd done so many times, coming back from work, speaking gigs late at night. I'd always hated it, the long slog up over the top of the Snake, down into the valleys, past Hathitage, then another hill to home, most often to an empty bed and dark and a dark flat. As the car zigzagged out of Glossop, I tried not to think about what I'd said, or if it was good or bad. I thought about how I could be so strong sometimes, to leave what I had said or done in the past, never to turn and feel remorse or even pride, but at the same time how I was tied to the past, always looking back to see where I'm going forward in some direction. I'm never interested in revisiting what I've done. Someone told me they wanted to delete an old blog post a while back, and I said they should have more respect for that past self. But what I had done is who I am. The programme would be broadcast in November. I expect I'd not listen to it, and whatever people said, good or bad, I'd fake disinterest, too afraid to know if for sure if I'd let myself down, too much of a coward to confound my low self-esteem that I'm shit. But then, as the dark thoughts chased me over the top, as they had done for so long, where I'd once slipped into the dark, lonely valleys of my choosing, it struck me that tonight there would be one less hill to climb, that down there in the dark was home, its windows lit, food on the stove, that there was someone waiting for me. So yeah, it's interesting reading that. So basically, I read it before. So yeah, that was when I was like going out with someone who's not my wife now, it's kind of weird because I think a lot of the things I write, I just write them. I don't sort of plan them out. I just sort of sit down and write them, bang them out, and that's it. So it's probably a bit like going back and reading a diary. Like of late, if the most writing I probably do these days that's not boring stuff about climbing is on my Instagram account, and often I kind of use it as a way of sort of priming the pump. So like this morning I wrote something about, someone asked me about if you've got a broken heart, like how to get over it, and so I just kind of sat down in Starbucks where my office is, and I had my coffee and I just wrote, like, I think you have to write, you've only got 2,000 characters on Instagram. So I just wrote something, just wrote it and then posted it. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad, but it's just a way of just getting my brain, just warming my brain up before I have to start, you know, doing some proper work. So people often think that these kind of things, you've really spent a lot of time thinking about them. But it's kind of scary rereading something like that, because you don't really know what you're going to say. You might start declaring your love for somebody or something. There was one or two bits I actually left out of that when I was reading it. So I must be getting a bit better at reading because I can sort of, you know, read ahead a little bit. So yeah, is that about fear? Yeah, so that is probably for me the fear. Like I don't get afraid. I can walk onto a stage and there's like 2,000 people. I don't feel any fear at all. You know, I can be on a mountain, you know, in a storm. You know, when we went to climb like Mount Kenya, was it last year? Year before? You know, we didn't get stuck on Mount Kenya, but we're basically, you know, on a point when we tried to do a traverse of Mount Kenya. We got to a point where it'd be very difficult to get down on it in any point. It's like incredibly loose, dangerous kind of mountain, and we're in like a big storm. We realized we had to try and get down off the mountain, and I didn't have any fear whatsoever. So for me, like fear is, I'll tell you what it's the fear of being found out for me is. Like I did a gig somewhere in Carnarvon in Wales, and a drunk guy got in, and right near the end, he started shouting from the back of the theatre, and he wasn't heckling, he was just shouting, and I just had like all that confidence you had to be standing in a stage, there was probably like 500 people there, just kind of withered for a second in that you thought you'd been found out, really, that you didn't know what. You'd said something that you shouldn't have said, or you were making it up or something. And that's like real fear. It was funny, when I used to do like corporate kind of things, I used to talk quite a lot about, you know, fear and anxiety and things. But I always remember one time some guy came up to me and he said that when you're like the managing director of some business, you know, your whole life is just full of fear, like every single day. And it really struck me that's kind of true. Like a lot of people go through life, you know, like in a way that I don't think I'd be capable of, you know. So trying to learn how to read things for me is still an issue. Isn't it weird? Like you're 48 years old and you still have a bit of trouble reading aloud, because for the forethought it was, you know, you're in front of a student, you're in front of an audience as well, and you're trying to read, and I don't think it wasn't live, but it was pretty live, and it felt pretty live. But I think this question, the next podcast, if I follow up to this podcast, I actually had a good question that came about from someone. He was asking about fear in relation to having read this, so maybe I'll read that next. So yeah. If anyone's got any, you know, stuff, questions, whatever, you know, bang them in to me, Andy@psychovertical.com, and that's probably left me with quite a few. Quite a few thoughts myself, which maybe that's a good thing, a bad thing. I'll try and put a link. This will be on my website. So if you go to my website, I'll try and dig out the link for the BBC program. You can have a listen to it. I've never listened to it myself, but people liked it. I think people said it didn't sound like me. That's because I was reading, I guess. So, and a few people asked about the curry recipe. I mentioned this thing about a curry recipe. That's on there as well. If you look on my website, I can't remember what it was, which one it was from. Maybe it was the last one, but I mentioned about a curry recipe that's very good. So, yeah, so that's it. That's time to sign off. And I shall post another one kind of Tuesday-ish, the one about lanyards. So, anyway, goodbye.
When
you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.